Sydney is so good to them people, and they don't deserve it, except for Marcus. She is so good to them. She is so kind to them. And, like, even when she stabs Richie, I feel like it was less than what he deserved.
I was about to say, like, when she stabs Richie, he absolutely deserves it. Like, that's a culmination of everything that he deserved. Hello, everyone. This is Alex.
And this is Em.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Good, The Bad, The Basic.
This is the podcast for anyone who enjoys binging new TV series and revisiting old favorites. On this podcast, we'll be discussing what we love, what we hate, and what's just a bit problematic about the TV and movies that we're addicted to, though not necessarily in that order. This week, we'll be launching our first impressions season, giving our honest feedback on the first one or two seasons of hit new, critically acclaimed shows. We'll be kicking things off with the internet's favorite new drama, The Bear.
The Bear is a comedy drama which follows a young award-winning chef de cuisine who leaves a thriving career in New York City and returns home to Chicago to take over his late brother's struggling sandwich shop. This ambitious, character-driven series is a social media darling, but is The Bear worth watching? Stay tuned.
All right, everyone, here's what we know about The Bear. The series is classified as a comedy drama, light on the comedy, very heavy on the drama. It is a Hulu original. It was released on June 23rd, 2022. That was the first season. And it was created by Christopher Storer. The series stars Jeremy Allen White as Carmen Barzato, a.k.a. Carmi. He's our protagonist. Eben Moss Bachrock as Richard Jeremovich, a.k.a. Richie. He is a de facto manager of the restaurant following Michael's death. And he was also Michael's best friend. Ayo Edebiri as Sydney Adamu, Carmi's sous chef. Lionel Boyce as Marcus Brooks, the bread baker turned pastry chef. Liza Colon Zayas as Tina Marrero, the line chef. Abby Elliott as Natalie Barzato, a.k.a. Sugar. She's Carmi and Michael's sister and co-owner of the sandwich shop called The Beef. Maddie Mathinson as Neil Fack, a childhood friend of the Barzatos and the restaurant handyman. And last but not least, Molly Gordon as Carmi's season two love interest, Claire. Let's get it.
Yeah, so The Bear, Christopher Storer, and Joanna Callow. But I'm gonna drop Joanna Callow, yeah, because she's also an EP and she directs a bunch of the episodes. And it's definitely, I think they run it together. So definitely two heavy hitters out the gate. But The Bear premiered last year, I want to say. The first season. Last year, and definitely became a sort of, it's weird to gauge sort of hits in the new streaming era, because the streamers very famously like keep their numbers secret. And so we're all just sort of like feeling it out of, is the show popular? Who's talking about it? Is it being reviewed? It's like trying to gauge hits now is like a very hard and I think nebulous thing. But for the most part, it is at least on the quote unquote coastal elite set. It's very much a hit. And I liked it very, very much. Like the show. Love the show.
Yeah, I liked it as well. So I watched the show specifically because of Jeremy Allen White, who made a very good impression on me during the years that I watched him as Philip Gallagher on Shameless. So I already know this guy can act. Okay, he's a heavy hitter. And him playing yet another angry Chicagoan, I was here for.
Right, he's definitely staying in, like, his lane, like, what he does best.
Yes, listen, if typecast was a man, it's that man.
That's what I'm saying, so, we love it.
I mess with it, and I know he does character-driven very well, because Shameless, although it was an ensemble cast, a larger ensemble cast, was also a character-driven show. There are no monsters, there's nothing supernatural, there's no gimmicks. It's 100% how these people relate to each other. So I know he was up for the task. And Ayo Edebimi, she is a newcomer onto the scene. But what I've seen of her, I liked. So I watched the show, and I honestly didn't think anybody else was watching the show.
Same. And I maybe also didn't think anybody else was watching the show.
Maybe I think my taste is more elite than it actually is. But then I get on TikTok, and all they're doing is TikToking about this damn show. And I'm like, okay.
I guess it's popular. That's what I'm saying. That's a vibe. And that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, we're all just, like, nobody really knows anymore. We're so siloed, you know what I mean, as, like, a viewing audience. So, like, you kind of think you're the only...
Are they not into it?
I don't know. Like, you just kind of think you're the only person watching a thing. And then you realize, oh no, everybody's watching the thing. But also, shout out to The Bear. The Bear is also, I meant to say this before, it's also like an FX, you know, it's an FX production. It's an FX-led mm-hmm. show. So once again, FX with the hits. Like, they're always going to have a hit.
Listen, I feel like FX and AMC are slept on because they always bring the hits.
Listen, they're
always.
If it's one thing FX and AMC is going to do, they're going to bring a motherfucking hit. But The Bear. The Bear is like, so yeah, it's like, so we're introduced to Carmi, and I mean, even just like the introduction of the show, very like, it's giving, like, I don't like to say auteur, but it's definitely giving something, I think, different from everything else that was in the landscape. We open on Carmi, and very quickly, like, I mean, this really intense, like, soundtrack, like, like, and so already we know that, like, this is, like, you know, you have a feeling of, like, rush of pace of, like, whatever I gotta do, I gotta get it and gotta do it, like, right now. Like, they're, like, we immediately get this sense of urgency. And so very quickly we are, we're thrown into Carmi and this restaurant, and we learn that Carmi has taken over this restaurant from his brother, who has died by suicide, and now he is, like, trying to save essentially this family restaurant that his brother was running, because it is, like, literally 2 seconds from being, like, gobbled up and foreclosed on.
He deals with a lot of feelings of anxiety, right? Because the kitchen environment is stressful enough, and the conditions under which he was trained is nothing short of psychological abuse.
Absolutely. And one thing I will tweak to, like, Sydney's character is, like, because we meet the Sydney character, yes, like, and she's someone who also studied at, like, you know, the Culinary Institute of America, which is where Carmi studied at. And the Sydney character is interesting because she is also coming off essentially like a failure. Sydney comes to work there really because she had started her own catering business and it failed. And so now it's sort of like Sydney herself is basically coming back to try again, to be like, okay, I got to do this again. I've got to try one more time. And she sees, however she finds out, you know, that he's there running the sandwich shop, and she figures, okay, like, I can come in to the sandwich shop and maybe, and, like, once again, like, you know, race or work towards this thing.
Right, that is correct. Yeah, she did come to work with Carmi, but specifically she wouldn't be working there if her own business hadn't failed. That is correct. So, you know, I mentioned the conditions under which Carmi was trained, which is, like I said, nothing short of psychological abuse. And then there's the whole backstory of Carmi and his family, right? Even though his brother Michael was a drug addict for many years. He was also the family golden boy. And Carmi and his sister Sugar were on the outskirts, so to speak. But he felt really left out. You know, Sugar and Michael co-owned the beef. And then Michael ran it with his best friend, Richie. And Carmi was always an odd man out. And part of the reason why he felt pushed to excel in the culinary world the way that he did was because he felt left out and ostracized by his own family. This is important information to know.
Yeah, specifically, Carmi asks Michael, Carmi tells Michael he wants to work at the shop, and Michael says no. Like, Michael explicitly is like, you are not allowed to come work at the sandwich shop. And then Carmi then responds to that being like, oh, okay. And thus, like, he is born, right? That's like his quote unquote villain origin story.
Yeah, except he doesn't, he channels it into like being super chef. And I'm not kidding. Like, he lives, thinks, breathes food. He always loves food. He comes from a family of people who cook and people who love food, but he made it his obsession to be the best. And he studied under people who were obsessed with breaking him and molding him and making him the best as a response to this, which obviously created a lot of anxiety within him as a person. And one of the things the show gets really right is that atmosphere of anxiety, not just in the kitchen in general, but within Carmi as a person.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's like, I mean, and that's, I think that's what's really rich about the Carmi character is that he has this monologue in the first season where he talks about, because Sugar encourages him to basically go to like the family version, like of Narcotics Anonymous, like when you're, when you have a family member, someone close to you that is an addict.
Yeah. Like, it's like Al-Anon, but for narcotics, I guess.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's like, it's for support of trying to deal with, you know, whatever. He has this monologue, like, not whatever, but like when someone close to you is an addict and you're trying to like fix yourself, because that in a sense damages you as well. It affects everyone. So, Carmi, so when he's at one of these meetings, he has this monologue where he talks about how, like, he was never really good at anything. He's like, I wasn't, like, super smart, and I wasn't funny, and I didn't have any talents, and, like, girls thought I was weird, and so, but, like, everyone loved Mikey, and so, so he's like, so, you know, when Mikey says I can't work at the restaurant, I was like, well, I'm going to go out and be the best chef, like, ever. As a big fuck you to you, Mikey. But then also sort of, like, but not even just as, like, a response of... what's happening in the monologue that I think is really interesting and rich is, that, like, he's talking about becoming the chef not because he has a desire to be a chef, but because it's a fuck you to his brother. Like, and that is what is driving this thing. And, like, he ends up... which will eventually take us to the, and like that sort of, that like tension of, I ended up being good at this thing, but I never really wanted to do this thing. Like, because I liked it, I did it as a fuck you to somebody. And now, and I just ended up kind of being good at it. Like, that tension will take us through the entire season and then takes us further, also takes us through the counter arc in season two, which I think is really interesting and rich.
I agree. It's very masterfully done. And in addition to what Alex has said, like, once Carmi becomes good at this, really good at this, he's, like I said, he's getting stars, he's getting recognition, he's getting all of this. I think it's fair to say that he does love cooking in the sense that the culinary world has given him his accolades in the way that his family has not. And so he wants to give his all to this, because in this sphere, he is being recognized and appreciated.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but I don't know that he cares. Like, I don't think he cares. Like, because I mean, even in the, because, so we're going to talk a bit more about season one. Like, it's hard to sort of talk about the plot of season one because it's very character driven. But like, by the time.
Oh, no, I was basing this on season two. Like what I just said, I'm basing that on season two and the monologue that that Carmi gives in the freezer. I don't have to be entertaining. I don't have to be amused. I don't have to, you know, that monologue.
Oh, yeah. I think, I think he gives it because, like, he's annoyed because this is the only thing he's ever been good at. But also, it's completely contradictory. But it's difficult because it's completely contradictory to, like, I think in the beginning when, you know, they're talking, they're all three of them are sitting down with Uncle Lee. It's either Uncle Jimmy.
I know what you're talking about.
And he's like, I don't really care about getting a star, like, or he doesn't even want the star, like, and that's ultimately, I mean, I think the great writing is like, I don't think Carmi is saying that ending monologue in season two because he cares about cooking. I think he is like frightened by what has just happened in the sense of like Sydney and Richie can do it without him. Sydney, Richie, and Marcus can do it without him. He's actually not really needed. And the idea of not being needed or the idea of not, like, finding, being the center of something, that is, like, what's upending him. Not the actual restaurant or the cooking or the accolades, because I don't think he cares.
It's really difficult because he says that, right? But then he goes on to end the relationship with Claire because she's a distraction from the restaurant.
I mean,
so I don't know. Carmi's a hard character to nail down because he's got a lot of anxiety. He's got a lot of feelings of inadequacy. He can do this one thing well. Like you said, he went into this one thing with the worst possible motivations and drive behind him. So I really want to see what they do in season three because it's hard to nail down just one central feeling, at least for me.
I mean, so then let's introduce the Sydney problem, which, Father God, like, I hate the Sydney Carmi discourse, but she is an important character in his universe because I do think that he is very, like, from season one, like, Carmi is, like, it's, like, he is excited by her because she is just as formidable as he is. Maybe more so, but he is also desperately afraid of her. He is also desperately afraid of her in the sense of like, he's like, oh, like this bitch can like outpace me. It's exciting because it is like iron sharpening iron, right? Like it is the, you know, it is like the sort of, the Janet Michael effect or like the idea of like somebody just as good as you, like you are now, you're in competition with yourself, but you're also in competition with them. Like it is the Peggy and Don of it all. That's like what their relationship is the most like to me is like Sydney is the Peggy to Carmi's Don in that like Don is this figure who is like the best at what he does, but Peggy is right there, like on his heels. Like she is clearly there to overtake him. And the tension between Peggy and Don is always like that unspoken of like, are you like, of like, when are you gonna finally axe me? Like, when are you, you're here to take my spot. So like now, because I know that, because I feel that, I am working to like make sure I am better. But it is like, that is what it is to me. Like, which is why I hate the like Sydney Carmi there in love discourse. Cause I'm like, no, it's Peggy and Don. It's like, it's competition. It is a subtle comp. It is subtle. It's not even subtle. It's very outright, but it is like, it's there. Like it's there and it's all the way there from like season one. Like when I love, you know, but like, you know, Carmi is very, in that first season, Carmi is very subtly like, you know, not putting Sydney down, but definitely like dismissing her in a way that like people dismiss someone when they're like afraid of them. I mean, it's like, it's incredible. Like so when, and you know, it all culminates to that episode with the risotto, right? Like with the risotto in the review, when Sydney makes the risotto and makes the beef thing, like it's some sort of like cooked beef with like sauce or whatever, and then the risotto, and she acts and she unknowingly gives it to the reviewer just because it's, you know, she's made it and it's there. And then she gets this glowing review that puts the sandwich shop back on the map. And Carmi is, and then when everything goes wrong, he's like, fuck you. Because it's like, you know, he immediately like is like, fuck you, you're the problem. Even though she isn't the problem. But he is like, the fact that like the review calls his revamped sandwiches basic and then praises her, but praises her dish. He is like, holy fuck, what do you mean she's better than me? Like, it's like, that's the tension. Like, that's what's happening. And it's fascinating and interesting to watch. But like, I don't know that it's romantic at all.
All right. I think that two things can be true. So I do think that Carmi sees Sydney as competition. But I also think that he sees her as a motivating force. And I do see why people think that this is a slow burn to a relationship. She's a huge trigger for Carmi, because like you said, he's constantly thinking, is she better than me? Is she better than me? Is she better than me? But also, like you said, this isn't his dream. It's just the only thing that he's good at. So he throws himself into it entirely. And in season two, I see a real pivot with Carmi and Sydney. I see an intimacy to their scenes that I don't see in other scenes. It's almost like they believe that the other is the only person that truly understands them. And maybe that's true. When you are working and you are achieving and you are aspiring on a particular level that other people are just not on. But for me, it seemed that he had more of a relationship with Sydney than with Claire. Yeah, he was sleeping with Claire. But other than that, Sydney was the person that he went to do his problems. Sydney is a person he wanted to sit down and deal, manage their problems with. And I think one of the biggest scenes that really pushes this slow burn narrative is when Carmi's having a really bad panic attack. And he tries to think about Claire. He tries to picture her face and he can't. He fails. Instead, he thinks about Sydney. And that's when he calms down. So, like I said, I think two things can be true. I think if they go in that direction of a romance, I wouldn't be mad at it, and it certainly wouldn't appear to have come out of nowhere. But if they keep things strictly professional and they do give us, you know, a more modern Don and Peggy, I wouldn't be mad at it either.
I mean, I did not read. I know what moment you're talking about. I didn't read it that way. I don't believe in this Sydney Carmi romance, but like. But if you believe, that's the choice they ultimately make, I guess, like it tracks, you can, but I don't believe in it. I just don't think there's nothing about her that says like, I don't know.
I just think that the Sydney and Carmi characters appear happiest when they're together. If they go in that direction, it wouldn't appear to come out of nowhere. It's not like when Harry falls in love with Ginny in the Harry Potter series, like that shit came out of nowhere. It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Listen, fine, but also why, like, and I will go on record saying it. Stop putting black girls with weird, racist white men who hate themselves. That's all I'm saying. Like, and I'm ending it there. That's how I feel about the Carmi Sydney.
Hold on. Is the Carmi character racist?
Deadass. Deadass. Like, what do you mean?
Okay, I feel like I missed a lot if I didn't pick this up.
What do you mean? Like, they like Richie all fucking season one, like, very subtly racially berates Sydney and Richie very much overtly racially berates Sydney. And then when Carmi subtly does it throughout the whole first season. And like,
racially.
racially, it is a racial tension there. It's not like he's not gonna call her nigger, but like he's like, it's subtle, but it's there. Like
I don't know. I definitely read Richie as being racist, but I felt like Carmi's digs towards Sydney were more misogynist in nature. I don't know.
I mean, I feel like you can't, like, she's a black girl. Like, you can't separate that. Like, they're like...
No, we cannot separate this. This is fact. You're completely correct. You cannot separate the racism and the misogyny that a black woman gets. However, and that's impact, however. Intent is a completely different thing. I absolutely 100% believe that when Carmi was making digs at Sydney, he was trying to make digs at and pull rank with her because he's a man in the kitchen. And cuisine is notoriously internationally known as one of the most misogynist fields. I don't think he would have behaved differently if she were a white woman. I only think that the impact lands differently, obviously, because she's not white.
I stand on that. Like, I stand on it. He takes digs at her. I don't think you can say, and that is the tension. Like, to me, like, that is definitely the tension, particularly, like, of, it's the undercurrent. It's the subtext in the piece. And this is why, like, and I think it's, like, at least I feel like it's obvious. And I guess, like, this is why a lot of, and like when you consider his family history and you consider the people that like he has around him, Richie, his mother later, and like Uncle Jimmy and all these people. And then when you factor in the fact that like Chicago is like one of the most racially segregated cities, you cannot say it's not also racial. And this is why, and like, if I'm sure like people are like going to be like, fuck you. But like, this is why, but also like, I think this like tension of not even wanting to say it's also racial from him is why like we have all these dumb shows that like are like, it's like we have all these dumb like, or like kind of shitty writing shows that are like, well, as a black woman, blah, blah, blah. Because like when you put everything in context and you still can't call the mat on something that's obviously racial and you like, we're like, oh, well, it's just misogynist. Like, well, this is it. Like, but it is also racial. When you consider that he's Italian American, when you consider that like Richie and Mikey, who was also like, had like kind of racist in like his little speech and like his mother, Italian American, and you consider Carmi's context, like you can't not say it's also a racial thing, whether it's because that's the subtext, that's the tension.
So you don't think that, well, Richie certainly wouldn't have, but you don't think Carmi would have spoken to her the same way if that was a white woman in the kitchen?
Dead ass.
That type of title. Okay.
Dead ass. I think he's way more like nice. I think like he's not pulling that rank on her like that. Absolutely not.
Okay. That's something to think about. So I want to talk now about the relationship between Carmi and Richie, because this is the source of the most tension throughout, right? Like throughout the show, they are constantly at each other's throats because Carmi was Michael's brother, but Richie was his best friend, like from childhood. And both of them seem to think that they meant more to Michael than what they did. That very last fight that they have when Carmi's locked in the walk-in freezer, they say a lot of nasty things to each other. including but not limited to Richie making digs at Carmi and essentially suggesting that Carmi is too broken to maintain a relationship because for some reason Richie has interjected himself into Carmi's relationship with Claire. Personally, I feel like Richie oversteps a great deal. But there's another line of arguing where like people think that Carmi puts up with Richie specifically because a part of him sees Richie as a surrogate brother. So like he cannot like divorce himself from Richie or kick Richie to the curb the way that he should.
Yeah, it's weird. They have like a, there is a symbiotic, like, I mean, Richie clearly has like some sort of symbiotic. I think what we understand later is symbiotic. Initially, maybe you can read as codependent relationship with, and not even codependency. I think it's just like normal, you know, we are all from the neighborhood and we all grew up together. Relationship with Carmi and Mikey and like his whole family. But, you know, Richie is kind of like a fuck up, right? He's 45 and he's still just sort of like doing this thing. Still like in
sort he's of, only 45?
Yeah, he's supposed to just be 45 or something. Oh, you thought he was like older or younger?
I mean, his face said older. I saw that codependency. I don't know if it was codependent with Michael, but it's certainly codependent with Carmi circa season one. And even in this season, when Carmi like tries to make him better at his job, right? Like he finds a restaurant that will take Richie on and allow Richie to stage. And Richie's like, you just want to get rid of me. Like, bro, how old are you?
No, I mean, that's so fascinating. Cause I think, I mean, no, I mean, yeah, yes, but also no, cause I do think Carmi made him stodge to set him up. Like, I do think that was part of, I did very much read that as like Carmi kind of setting him up, but he doesn't, like he finds purpose, right? And I think that is like kind of wonderful for the Richie character in the second season, this sort of realization that in truth, it was really Mikey and Carmi kind of holding him back rather than himself, like rather than himself. Yeah. Or like, because.
Well, specifically Mikey, because Carmi just got there.
Yeah, Carmi just got there. But really, it was Mikey. Mikey was all like, you know, I do think it's great to have like, you know, because Mikey is like this deified golden god to them. But like in reality, it was Mikey that was the one that was always holding him back, because we do see that like Richie is great with people. Like that is Richie's thing. Like I, you know, we all have a thing in life, and we all have like a thing in life. And I believe that truly. And Richie's thing is that he's just really great with people. Like he gets people. And it's interesting because we do see that a lot. We do even see that in the first season. I think that's why, you know, this show is so attractive. The writing is so good. Like you really can connect these ideas given in the first season and then connect them all the way through to season two. Because in season one, there's like this, I think it's on the back end of one of the episodes, but it's like the shop is opening for the day it's opening. They're opening for the day. And when it opens, Richie like knows the regulars. He knows about he knows that one regular's dog is at the hospital. He knows that the other person is like just got married. Like he likes people. Like he knows people. Like, and that is like a true talent. Like as somebody who's actually really, speaking from personal experience, is like kind of bad at it in terms of like bad at like remembering birthdays and stuff. Like, you know, that being good with people, really remembering, really being invested in people and their stories and their lives and like catering to like being able to serve in that way is a true like talent and testament. And so to see it like completely flourished and realized in season two is such a great arc. It's a great and beautiful arc all the way down to, you know, like you said, the fight in the fridge. I mean, previously in the episode, right before the fridge fight, it's the episode is like a counter episode to, I want to say it's episode 7, the review, which is when like Sydney stabs Richie in season one. It's, we have like a sort of a counter in that, like it's a reverse in that you have like Sydney and Richie like really working together and finding a mutual respect for each other and really killing the service. Like,
I'm going to keep it real with y'all. Richie Stages is my favorite episode of season two. It's brilliant.
It is.
I was so happy to get away from like Sydney's tension and Carmi's anxiety and just really see somebody flourish and thrive. Because like Alex said, Richie is good at this. He knows people. He is a natural concierge. He's a natural valet. He's good at this. He gets people the shit that they need. He remembers details about them. And watching him shine in this environment is great. Now, personally, I don't think Carmi set him up. I think, if anything, it was a test. Like, if Richie succeeds, great. If Richie fails, also great, because then I'll have a reason to get rid of him. But he says something really interesting to Richie, too, where he's like, you did great. I knew you would. And Richie seems shocked by this, which also further, leads credence to the theory that Mikey was the one holding him back. I 100% believe that everybody was standing in Mikey's shadow, including Richie.
Yeah, I can see that. You definitely see and feel that. Let's talk about my actual favorite, the actual love connection of this show, like the true, Marcus.
Marcus and Sydney?
Yes, listen. I'm rooting for those kids. I'm rooting for those kids.
I was just about to ask you about that. Listen, I love Marcus. And the episode where Marcus stages abroad, what was it, in Amsterdam?
Copenhagen.
That was my second favorite episode of the season. I think he did really young. I love seeing Will Poulter guest star. I don't know how they're paying these guest stars, man.
Maybe. Well, they broke. That's why. Because they're not paying them, according to the SAG.
I guess not.
After strike,
I guess not. But no, I love it. Marcus and Sydney have something. But feels it strong. The Marcus and Sydney thing is doing the thing that I like a lot. If they are in game, that is. I also see that being as kind of a slow burn. And Marcus seems to like Sydney a lot more than Sydney likes him, which, speaking solely to heteronormativity and heterosexual couples, that's the way it should be.
That's what I'm saying. I love that. Like, I fuck with that heavy. Like, I
hate seeing these girls chasing after a guy in these shows. It hurts me.
It hurts me.
Look, the Claire character, she hurt me bad. Baby, when he gave me the wrong number, that should have been your cue to fall back.
That's what I'm saying. Like, girl, aren't you a doctor? Like, be serious.
Put this together. Put the piece. And then you're going to call him on the right number to call him out for giving you the wrong number.
Like,
and basically try to, like strong arm him into saying that he wanted to give you his number. Sis, be for real. This was doomed from the start.
Go home, babes. Go home. Hang it up.
Man gave you the wrong number on accident will literally track you down in the yellow pages, stalk you on Facebook, and find your address to give you the right number.
Dead ass. Oh my gosh. But, okay.
So like legit, Sydney and Marcus, I am rooting for them. I'm rooting for them because I don't see enough healthy Black love on TV. I just want it.
I'm rooting for those crazy kids. I love them. Okay, so like, Marcus is one of, so there are a lot of side characters in the show, and Marcus definitely has one of the best arcs. And I love the Marcus character. From the beginning, I love the Marcus character. So when Carmi throws Sydney to the fucking wolves because just to do that shit. Carmi, like, when he does it, Marcus is definitively it. Like, when I knew that I loved Marcus was when he, like, goofed on Sydney and then she spilt the stuff. And then he very much said, he's like, I'm sorry. And then like, he very much comes to her like in a puppy dog way and is like, I'm sorry. And then cleans it up for her. And then subsequently apologizes again because for everybody's like shitty behavior. That's when I knew I loved him. That's why I was like, this is, yeah, this is no, a man.
Marcus is a real one. In a sea of fucking terrible people. And we've been talking a lot about Carmi and Richie, but Tina was a bitch to Sydney, straight up.
Tina was a bitch. Like, and I feel like I forgive Tina mostly because I feel like I get it in the sense of, like, she's older. She's in this kitchen. Maybe she had a dream to do this thing, but, like, Mikey isn't a teacher. Carmi certainly is not a teacher. And she, and then here comes this girl who gets a position that maybe she feels, like, entitled to because she's been there longer just off of seniority. And then, so, like, I get, I get why Tina is, but then when Sydney is like, well, no, like, let me teach you, and Sydney takes the time to teach, and then Tina's like, well, no, I can, like, this is not somebody who is here to, like, be against me, like, then I feel like I forgive it. But, like, yes, wild behavior.
So I don't forgive Tina because I'm so tired of us giving passes to bitter old broads who want to shit on young people's parade. Like, this isn't like a job at a factory, okay? This is a specific skill set. You having worked at the sandwich shop all these years and maybe picking up some skills, you know, along the way, doesn't change the fact that you didn't go to culinary school. And when Tina goes, that's another great episode. She does really, really well. But baby, nobody was stopping you from going. You're taking your frustrations out on this girl for what?
Well, I mean, like,
forgetting the level of education that was always available to you as well.
Well, not necessarily, because they pay for it. Like, they pay for it. I think that's a big barrier for her, maybe. Like, that they pay, like, the fact that they're going to pay for it.
But, at the end of the day, I'm seeing an old brown woman take her frustrations out on a young black girl, and it's ick.
It is ick. But like, I forgive it still.
That's the reason why I don't forgive it. Because you know what? They paid for you to go to school, Tina. Who paid for Sydney to go to school? Let's think about that.
Her dad.
Exactly. Her dad had to come out of pocket and put that girl in culinary school. And you know, black parents probably, you know, they have their heart in their fucking throat anytime they pay for their children to do anything artistic, anything that's not engineering, doctoring, or, you know, some other field where you're going to make beaucoup bucks. So, like, I don't know. I just feel like we talk about ageism a lot in the world. Like, oh, that's ageist. But 9 times out of 10, when I see people of different ages and different generation groups, it's always some older person beating down on a younger person for what they think is unearned privilege, or trying to shit on their dreams in some way. And it's like, I don't know, Tina, girl, I'm tired of you. And honestly, if we're going to keep it a buck, Latinos are just as anti-Black as white people are. Like, non-Black Latinos are also deeply anti-Black.
You know, it's hard. I think when you're older, it's just hard. I think it's hard. It's hard to, like, have a dream and then, like, then think you're making steps towards it, and then you realize you're not making steps towards it, and, like, you think that you're getting in a place, you think you're doing a lot of things, only to then spend years doing that and then turn around and realize it's not what you had at all, and so now you're like, what are you supposed to do?
I get it. I understand the motivations behind Tina, but we could use that everything you just said and apply it to Richie, right? Because at the end of the day, they have their problem. Richie's an asshole.
Richie's a nasty person. Yes.
I can make any excuse for this. Like, oh, they're struggling. They wanted this thing. They think they've earned this thing. But at the end of the day, like, Sydney's got her own fucking problems too. You don't just get to unload on the new guy.
I'm saying that, like, Richie is horribly nasty to Sydney as well, also, when she comes. Like,
oh, no, I never denied that.
But, like,
I'm saying that literally everyone except Fak and Marcus were terrible to her.
That's what I'm saying. Everyone shits on Sydney, but that's what I'm saying. Like, we're giving Carmi and Richie a free pass, but we're not going
to. No, we never gave Carmi and Richie a free pass. I never gave him a free pass. I definitely went on record and said that Richie was being racist and that Carmi was being misogynist towards Sydney. That was very well established. I think I said that. I definitely said that. But like I said, the only reason, my thing is that I feel like, and I hate this because, and I think the reason I'm seeing so passionately about this is because this is a narrative that I see over and over again throughout television, regardless of the genre, regardless of what's going on. There's always an older woman being shitty to a younger woman, and we're supposed to accept it because, well, she didn't have as much access in her day, or, you know, she didn't have as much freedom in her day, or she sees this younger woman as competition. And it's like, okay, you're still being a bitch though.
I think where I'm coming from is that let me finish this whole thought. If we are forgiving Carmi and Richie, which I personally am not forgiving Carmi,
I'm not forgiving them either.
It's one eye open and a knife under the pillow for those two motherfuckers. Dead ass. That's where I stand. Dead ass. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's where I am personally. But that's what I'm saying. A lot of people are not there. A lot of people are like, Carmi and Cindy are in love. I'm saying no. It's a knife under the pillow and one eye open for that bitch. Dead ass. Like, but if we're forgiving Carmi and Richie, I think you have to forgive Tina as well. That's where I stand at.
Okay, cool. Because I don't forgive anybody. I never did. So it's fuck Tina too, to be like I said. And again, there's a lot of things behind this. Like I said, I've seen this narrative play out on television constantly. The writer's trying to humble the young female character with an older female character. I hate it. It's disgusting. I want y'all to stop doing it. I want us to stop giving passes to old broads to be bitchy because of what they dealt through in their day, as if young women are still not dealing with patriarchy and systemic misogyny on a daily basis. I want it to stop. And personally, having lived in an area with a very large non-Black Hispanic community, they're terrible. They're shitty most of the time to Black people. And their cultures are just as ripe with anti-Black as any Italian, German, Irish family that you would ever meet. Again, not all. I got to put that disclaimer out there. But I want to say 9 times out of 10 that I have personally dealt with racism in South Florida, which has a very large non-Black Hispanic community of various nationalities, it's been from a Latino. It hasn't been from a white person. And they're so aggressive with it because they think they get a pass because they're a person of color too.
That's fair. I mean, that's fair. I've got Cuban relatives. So I get that.
So that's where I'm coming from. I'm very tired. I'm tired of that. And I'm tired of shows showing us the anti-Blackness in non-Black groups and basically us like coming to an understanding with these people. It feels very not fully formed. That relationship honestly reminded me that the writer on the show was a white dude. I don't like anybody except Marcus and Sydney.
And that's what I'm saying. And so I think that's also something that I want to contribute to my, it is absolutely racial narrative, because I do think it's significant that when everyone hates Sydney except for Marcus, everyone is like really nasty to Sydney except for Marcus and the other Black guy that works there. They're the only ones.
What is his name again? I keep forgetting and I feel shit about it.
I just remember he's like the baseball guy, because the whole thing was that like he used to play for the Chicago Cubs and then he got injured, and that's right. Why he works there. Right. And Ibrahim, that's the other, like, yes, that's what I'm saying. The only people who are like even vaguely nice to Sydney are all the Black employees, and I'm like, yes. Like, because they're all like, yes, that's, it is racial.
Yeah, I mean, on the racism, it's not that I'm trying to give Carmi a pass. It's because I've consumed way too much media about like kitchens and cooking shows, and like I feel like all of like the top chefs, the head chefs in any kitchen, are vile people, and they take like vileness as like part of their position. Like, they're shitty to all of their employees. So again, like I said, I don't know where the line between misogyny ends and racism begins, only because I've only ever seen nasty chefs in all of these renderings and all of these depictions. Just nasty.
I think it's just I think it's, like I said, it's the context. It's the context of who he is and his history and like where they are.
Give me a minute. Cause I think you're onto something, because I think if I had seen the Seven Fishes episode first, I can see what you're talking about. Yeah, I agree.
In the same way that you understand that like non-Black Latinos in Miami are like anti-Black, it's the same way that I understand, like I have an intimate understanding of like the Italians and Germans and the white people in Chicago are racist. Like they just are. That's who they are. Like as a demographic, it's the same understanding. It's the same thing. So like if this show were like set in Miami and Carmi is like white Cuban and we're all we're doing is changing the setting and everything is the same. And Carmi was white Cuban, you would be like, of course he's racist. You would absolutely. And
you're right. You're right.
You'd be like, of course, because you have intimate. That's how I'm saying. Yes, he is. Of course. Like that is who, that's what's happening.
No, you're right. You're right. I can see this point, but you know what? Now you're going to have to concede the point that I'm about to make.
Okay.
The fact that we're now on the same page that Carmi's behavior was in fact racist and meant to be. We have to prepare ourselves for a reality where Sydney and Carmi will end up together because they love doing this shit.
Oh my God. I hate it. That's what I'm and that's what I'm saying. It's like, I hate it if they come together mostly because I just want Black girls to like be free. But like, I also think that like when you consider the context, like Italian American, racist Chicago, racist, they all date Black girls anyway. Like, that's what I'm saying. That's why the writing is so great, because like all of these contextual things will still line up, right? Like that is a thing. The racist Italian American having like a secret Black girlfriend, like that's we've been talking about that since the 70s in media. Like it's a running joke. Like it's a running thing. Even if Sydney and Carmi do end up together, once again, I will be like, that's brilliant writing, because yes, that is like, that's what they do. It's nuts.
This makes me very sad.
you're like, I just want to be free, but like,
can I just have like a moment of silence? I'm sorry. Like I said, I see the elements. I see them breadcrumbing the audience to go in either direction. I would understand it and I would have seen it coming if they end up together. But with my new understanding, I'm very alarmed and I'm overcome and I'm sorry. Not okay.
I'm sorry. It's okay.
I just need someone to hold my hand. But anyway, I do think even if Sydney and Marcus don't end up together, they're going to hook up. But I want to talk about his behavior in season 2.
Oh, it like hurt me so bad.
Copenhagen, because okay. It was rather alarming. He was giving possessive boyfriend. And baby, you ain't even like a close friend yet.
I think he was just awkward. I think he was just, it was like.
I don't think it's because necessarily Sydney's on the spectrum. I think like he said, she missed it, but it might be because she was so busy and overwhelmed with her own thoughts, you know?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. She's just running the kitchen. So like, that's what I'm saying. Like when he does it, I was like, Marcus, no, like, don't you see, this is like the absolute worst wrong time to do this. Like,
but I do think Marcus is on the spectrum. Sorry.
I feel that. I love him though. No, that's true. Cause when he gets obsessed with the donuts, like singularly, like to the point,
even the way he asked Sydney out, like he seems to lack a sort of situational awareness.
He does very much so. Because when he's, you're right, because when he, in the first season, when he is like doing the donuts and they are like, and the whole like kitchen is collapsing because of the error with the takeout, with the online takeouts, he's still on these donuts. And it's like, right.
He addressed Sydney. He's like, are you avoiding me? Are you mad at me? Are you not talking to me? And it's like, no, you got to be on the spectrum. Because even if he was really pissed off with her, he would have saved that anger for a private moment.
Right.
If he were neurotypical, he would have saved that anger for a private moment. He would not have let that anger be seen by people who are completely outside of the situation. And like, again, confronting her at the worst possible time.
Worst.
It's a restaurant opening, bro. Sit the fuck down.
I know, because he's like, oh, are you mad? It's like, no, she's just busy. Like, she's just super busy.
Like, literally, let right. the bitch be busy. like she's but no. Kind. I don't know how he's going to come back from that, because that scene made my pussy dry.
Oh, I was just like, I like, oh my gosh, my hand, my face just went straight into my hands. I was just like, oh, Marcus, my sweet baby, like, mm. But I love Marcus. Marcus is my favorite. And I love, so, and I guess like Marcus and Tina, even though I forgive Tina. You said it's fuck Tina forever. That's fair.
Like, even if I, like I said, I feel like they will try to redeem the Carmen character because he's our protagonist. It's always going to be fuck Richie and fuck Tina. Sorry.
That's fair. No, that's fair, because I also live there too. Like, but, well, at least I live with fuck Richie forever. But with Marcus with Tina, I, like, think what's so great about the Sydney character, and I think is so endemic to her, even though, like, she's very much, like, she's definitely, like, on her own mission to, like, run towards something again, to like get back up and fight for a dream again. You know, she's never, what makes her the antithesis of Carmi is that like she is like all about teaching. She's all about giving. You know, she's the, like, Marcus and Tina have been working there for years. Like, right before Sydney even comes in, like, they've been working under Carmi for however long Carmi is running. Because I don't think Carmi just, in the first season, I don't think Carmi just gets there, but he's maybe been there for like a month or so. That's what it seems like. But, you know, they've been working there. Sydney gets there and she's like, okay, like, you want to make a donut? Make a donut. Like, you want to do a dessert? Like, fuck yeah, I believe in you. Like, and I'm going to help you however you can, you know. Sydney is like, you know, you peeled the potatoes, those are great mashed potatoes, like, fuck yeah, like, next time, you know, a little heavier on the butter or whatever. Like, she, as much as she is running towards her own dream and really trying to fight for something for herself, she doesn't like step on other people or like berate other people to get there. Like, she's very much about bringing other people, like, helping other people be the best they can be as well, which to me is extremely significant to her and her character, and why Marcus is in love, and he should be, because she is everything. Sydney is everything.
Sydney is so good to them people, and they don't deserve it, except for Marcus. She is so good to them. She is so kind to them. And like, even when she stabs Richie, I feel like it was less than what he deserved.
I was about to say, like, when she stabs Richie, he absolutely deserves it. Like, that's a culmination of everything that he deserves. Like,
if it had gone a little bit deeper, I would have been like, all right, bet, they're even now.
Like, her stabbing Richie is not, is just absolutely, like, it's deserved. Like, he deserved that to be stabbed. It was coming for him. But yeah, it's like, so there's so much.
Yeah. So what is your grade for The Bear?
Oh my God, good, of course. Loved it. So excited to love something. Because you know I don't like anything.
Yes, Alex is a woman of very, very singular upper echelon, top tier taste. She don't like a lot of but no, I liked it too. I liked it very much. And there's always some tension. There's something like in the periphery at all the time, which I think is really, really well done.
So there you have it, folks. This is everything that we think made The Bear good, engaging, and relatable. If you'd like to check out this series, The Bear is streaming over on Hulu. And if you've enjoyed this episode of The Good, The Bad, The Basic, be sure to share it with your friends. If you're a patron, be sure to check out our The Bear playlist if you haven't already. Tune in next week as we continue our first impression season with our thoughts on the Peacock original, Bel Air, a modern dramatic retelling of the iconic 90s sitcom.
The Good, The Bad, The Basic is currently streaming on all major podcast platforms, so be sure to tune in to our regular weekly episodes on the go. Leave us a review on your preferred platform and share our weekly episodes on your social media. Follow us at The Good, The Bad, The Basic on Twitter and at Good Bad Basic Pod on Instagram to get in on our daily content. Also, be sure to follow our SoundCloud page, The Good, The Bad, The Basic, where all of our weekly episodes debut. If you love this sort of content and want more, become a show producer and patron over on Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/goodbadbasic. Your support allows us to keep bringing you our regular weekly episodes, as well as exclusive bonus material. Until next time, bye everyone.